Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast again. I'm here today with Bob Latham, partner at the global law firm of Jackson Walker, LLP, chairman of the World Rugby Regulations Committee, and author of the book Winners and Losers, Rants, Riffs, and Reflections on the World of Sports. Mr. Latham is a man with widespread experience in both the legal and sports worlds, and is also an alumnus of the University of Virginia School of Law, as am I. So I'm glad to have him here today. To start off, could you just introduce yourself, give us a little bit of your backstory to better get to know you and your history?
Sure. Thank you, Peter. Pleasure to be with you today. As you mentioned, I attended the University of Virginia School of Law. Before then, I did my undergraduate work at Stanford University, where I started playing the sport of rugby, continued to play through law school. And after I got out of law school, I took a job with the firm of Jackson Walker in Dallas, Texas. I've been here 32 years. The first 13 of those years, I continued to play rugby for the Dallas Harlequins, which was one of the top club sides in the United States. And when my playing career wound down, I wanted to stay connected with the sport. So I got involved with the administration, which led to numerous positions in the sport. I got on the USA Rugby Board in 1994. So I've been on it for 21 years. I've been elected chairman twice. I'm currently the chairman of USA Rugby and was heavily involved in the effort to get rugby into the Olympics, where it will debut. Rugby Sevens will debut in Rio next year in 2016. And because of my service with USA Rugby, I got involved with the International Federation, which was known then as the International Rugby Board, now World Rugby. I'm on the World Rugby Executive Committee, and I chair the World Rugby Regulations Committee, for which my legal background comes in handy at times.
Okay, well, yeah, no, that's great that you have those different perspectives, both as somebody that's played a sport and has been kind of in the more administrative side as well. So today we're going to talk about discipline in sports. It's a hot topic right now from different sports leagues. Recent events in the NFL and other leagues have shown that it's important right now, from Ray Rice to Adrian Peterson to Tom Brady. One thing that's become clear as discipline has been handed down is the importance of having a disciplinary process. Why do you think that process is so important?
Well, I think it's critical to the credibility of the sport. The process has to be seen to be fair. It needs to be predictable so that people who engage in certain behavior know the consequences in advance. Hopefully that will be a deterrent to them. But if it's not, then the process will certainly be viewed as fair. And it not only needs to be credible to the participants, but it has to be credible to the fans as well. And I think fans of the NFL are a bit frustrated with the seemingly ad hoc discipline that's coming down. There's very little consistency between Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, and Tom Brady. And obviously the Tom Brady saga has yet to conclude. So yeah, it's, people want to see athletes on the field, and if they're not there, they need to know the reason for it, and they need to accept the reason for it. And a clear and consistent disciplinary procedure, I think, is very important for that.
Right. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's similar to the idea of laws. You don't want to have an ex post facto law, because then people can't avoid violating it knowingly. And also it hurts the legitimacy of the system in general.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So different leagues and different systems obviously have different procedures set up. Can you give us some examples of some of those procedures and how they facilitate that faith in the system?
Well, sure. And I'll stick with what I know best, which is World Rugby. From the perspective of the Regulations Committee, we deal with everything from on-field misconduct, punches and dangerous tackles, to off-field issues, criticisms of referees, anti-doping. And there's a set table, for instance, that if you engage in this particular violation, then here are the potential ranges of punishments. And it can be escalated based on past behavior. It can be escalated based on its effect on that particular match. And it's set out. And any of the disciplinary officials who enforce that rely on that. And they look at previous precedent. They look at previous dangerous tackles of the same variety, for instance. And so there's a consistency to it, and there's an acceptance of it. I think one of the other things that I'm particularly proud of in rugby is we have the ability for a video referee or a video official to enforce discipline as well. So You know, we don't have the diving that you have in soccer. Soccer could get rid of diving in a minute if they had somebody who could look at the tape afterwards and mete out suspensions if somebody's caught diving. We're able to, you know, if a referee doesn't detect a punch thrown on the field, the off-field official can do that and issue punishment even after the match. So in that way, you don't have somebody saying, oh my gosh, look at that. He got away with that. And our guy in a previous game did the same thing and he didn't get away with that, because the fans know it'll be looked at afterwards and taken care of. And it's made for a cleaner game, and it's made for a disciplinary process that I think is hopefully largely accepted by the participants and fans.
Right. Yeah. No, I've had that experience in other sports, you know, even seeing the outcome of a game being turned by a call and having no recourse to turn to like a video replay or something like that. So,
right. And you look at, you know, it, tennis, believe it or not. I mean, I grew up in the era of John McEnroe, and obviously it was sometimes entertaining what players in those days did, but it's a terrific system of video replay that gets the fans involved and really limits the number of disputes and keeps the game moving. People are always worried that it'll slow down the game. That was a concern in baseball, but I think having some recourse is a good thing.
Okay. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. And also with rugby in particular and international sports like that, I'm not super familiar with rugby, but from what I understand, like you say, there's this world rugby system, there's USA rugby, you know, there's obviously college teams, things like that. Do the different organizational structures ever run into conflict in how they deal with these issues?
That's a great question. And we're very lucky in rugby that it's just kind of the way it's evolved, that the world rugby regulations are adopted by the federations, the national federations around the world. So really you have the same table of discipline, whether you're playing in an international or whether you're playing in a club match in the United States. I think we're pretty rare in that regard, but I think you're going to see, as all sports become more global, I think you're going to see that harmony between what's done at the international level and what's done in national leagues. You know, hockey, for instance, there are different procedures and different ranges of discipline between the NHL and when you're in the Olympics. So rugby's a bit of the rare exception, but I think it's also the wave of the future.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It benefits all the parties if there's some kind of system that makes sense.
Right.
Okay, well, yeah, we've talked about how these organizations mete out discipline. Obviously, there's potential legal consequences based on illegal acts off the field. What are some potential non-legal issues associated with discipline and punishment in sports?
Well, it's somewhat hard to differentiate between legal and non-legal. They're sometimes interconnected, but I'll give you an example of something that really touches on legal and non-legal, and that's the issue of Hall of Fame eligibility or Hall of Fame voting in Major League Baseball and what to do about players from the steroid era. Major League Baseball, I think, has to share some of the blame, because there really was not an effective performance-enhancing drug policy in Major League Baseball at the time. So steroids are illegal, but you know, so is drinking and driving. And I don't think players are being kept out of the Hall of Fame for doing illegal things, or we wouldn't have much of a Hall of Fame, especially for players of the 1920s who were kind of famous for breaking the rules of prohibition. So it's really the cheating the sport. But, you know, there was a very vague memorandum that went around that Major League Baseball cites as being its policy that mentioned, you know, don't do anything illegal. And it was mainly talking about recreational drugs, which were prevalent at the time. And then it said, don't do anything illegal, including steroids. Well, that doesn't really suggest that, you know, steroids are in a category unto themselves, as they should be, because they're performance enhancing and the other things they were lumped with are not. So it's basically, you know, don't do anything illegal. The testing was ineffective. So, you know, what do you do with these players? Can you tell the history of baseball without mentioning their names? What do you do with the ones that would have been in the Hall of Fame before they took steroids, but then took them at the end of their career to prolong their career? And, you know, those are questions that are difficult to answer. Maybe you just have, you know, a wing of infamy in the Hall of Fame, but I think we'll, you know, that discussion will go on for quite a while.
Right. Yeah. And obviously that attracts people interested in these legal issues and also kind of your more normal or typical sports fan as well. There's a lot to debate there, and it depends on what you view as the requirements for eligibility in a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I suppose cheating the game is a non-legal issue, but it's something that, you know, fans and players and everybody is very, very concerned about. And, you know, when someone is viewed to have cheated the game somehow, whether by doing something that is illegal by the standards of criminal law or not, it's still cheating the game, and it certainly tarnishes their reputation and their legacy.
Right. And tying that into what we've been talking about already, it's important to have some kind of structure there so people can understand, you know, what would keep somebody out of the Hall of Fame or not. Otherwise, it's this hazy thing, or is it, you know, is it alcohol related? Is it legal related? Is it on the field stuff? You know, it's arbitrary.
Yeah. And there's a recent example of that from a guy who just died, Kenny Stabler, the great quarterback of the Oakland Raiders, who many, including me, think had a Hall of Fame career. And we don't know why he hasn't gotten voted in, but he had some association with gamblers in the day. And there was one game in particular where he threw four interceptions, and that created some cloud. So, you know, the Hall of Fame voting in any sport is very interesting, because it's usually in some back room, and you know, the criteria are flexible as they should be. But yeah, you never know quite what goes into it. And a lot of non-legal issues are probably involved.
Yeah. And maybe that's the way it should be, because it keeps it interesting and people can debate it, you know, certainly gives jobs to sports writers and things like that.
Absolutely. And allows us to talk about it.
Exactly. So before we wrap up, I just wanted to talk a little bit about your book. Again, the title is Winners and Losers: Rants, Riffs, and Reflections on the World of Sports. And, you know, the title certainly leads one to think that contains more than just stale legal issues. You know, is there a percentage of that book that's legal and other part that's anecdotes and things like that?
Well, I tried to not make it stale legal issues. Actually, it's a collection of columns that I wrote for Sports Travel Magazine, and I still write a monthly column. So this is a collection of about 6 years worth, and they've given me great latitude to really write about whatever was on my mind or whatever sports event I felt like covering at the moment. So it's mainly about sports and sports travel. It's the name of the magazine, and what it's like to be at major sports events. So it's written from a fan's perspective, what it's like to be at a Super Bowl, what it's like to be at Wimbledon, what it's like to be at a horse racing triple crown race. But yeah, I occasionally step back into my legal frame of mind, and I've written about Hall of Fame eligibility. I've written about the controversy involving nicknames in sports, and particularly Native American nicknames. My favorite anecdote there is that the NCAA has a rule that if you get permission from the organization that would be most likely to grant permission or most appropriate to grant permission, then you can use a Native American nickname. Florida State is able to use the Seminoles because the Seminole tribe of Florida gave them permission to use it. That permission came from the chief of the Seminole tribe, Max Osceola, and the mascot, of course, of the Florida State team that rides out on the horse is known as Chief Osceola. So that's always a good strategy to try to get permission.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I didn't know about that.
Well, okay. There's other nuggets like that in the book. So it's supposed to be both entertaining and hopefully informative.
Okay. Well, yeah. And again, the title is Winners and Losers: Rants, Riffs, and Reflections on the World of Sports. So yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of interesting nuggets in there.
I hope so.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time out of your day to record this podcast. I know you're busy. I think we've discussed some important issues, and discipline in sports has been and will continue to be an important part of sports that we follow every day. So do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to leave us with?
No. Thanks, Peter. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Good luck with the podcast. And I always enjoy talking sports, and I hope people at the law school enjoy it as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIB Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at SportsLawBizBlog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.